And joining us right now from the Oberlin Heritage Center is Liz Schultz. Good morning, Liz.
Morning.
Nice to see you again. Always fun to come out and see what's going on. Weather gets nice, you can do a lot of your walking tours.
Oh, yes. We're looking forward to that. We just had a grounds cleanup day. We're excited to have all the kids coming out for their kind of end-of-the-year field trip. So it's starting to look beautiful around here. We'll have to get some photos, too.
Let's talk about some of the things that are coming up. There's a program coming up on Wednesday, I understand, related to the Wright brothers.
Tomorrow, Professor Norman Craig of Oberlin College will be talking about the Wright family and their connection to Oberlin. A lot of people have heard of the Wright brothers, but they may not have heard of the Wright sister, Catherine. She was the only one of the siblings to graduate from college, and she graduated right here from Oberlin. And was later a trustee, and we have a few landmarks around town that are connected to the Wright brothers, or Catherine. So we like to bring that up to people. And of course, there's a new book by David McCullough about the Wright brothers, and a lot of people are just starting to come back to their interest in this family. And he talks about her as well.
Did she spend time here after graduation?
I don't believe so. I think after graduation, she was taking care of the family for the most part, and also with her brothers. They were very good scientists and inventors, but when they were over in Europe, they were trying to sell their idea of the airplane. People didn't quite know if this was the real deal or what they could do with it, and they were very focused on the mechanics of things. But Catherine, being college educated, she spoke some foreign languages, she was actually able to interact with people, ambassadors and others that they might not be able to. So she kind of greased the wheels and helped them out a lot on their trips to Europe.
And before we went on, you mentioned the right name can be found several places here in town. Tell us about that.
Yes. The physics laboratory of Oberlin College is called the Wright Physics Lab, and that is named for the Wright brothers, specifically Orville. And also many people going to the art museum, the Allen Memorial Art Museum, might notice a very lovely fountain right in front, but may not know that that is in honor or memory of Catherine, that she was a trustee of Oberlin College, and later in life she married someone who had been her tutor back in her college days, but she died shortly after the marriage, so the fountain is in her memory there.
You mentioned how there's a new book out, and sometimes history kind of resurfaces through other either movies, history, books. Do you find it then as part of your challenge is to sort of see how you fit in with maybe what pop culture is talking about in history and how that relates to Oberlin?
We try to do that, especially for youth programs, like when the Percy Jackson series was popular. That's all about ancient Greece and the Olympians, so we had an ancient Greece program. There's a new series, I think, on HBO about the Underground Railroad, so we've had a few people asking us about that related to that. Of course, now the book about the Wright brothers. So we do try to tie into things. We've also been watching this $20 bill change with Harriet Tubman and figuring out how we can talk about that, because she's, of course, related to the Underground Railroad, and Oberlin was a major station on the Underground Railroad. But we hear different sides about the $20 bill thing, so we're not quite sure where we fall on it yet.
You see that? Heritage and history goes full circle. It's still current today. It's still relevant today.
Mm-hmm.
You can always bring it back somehow, some way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always think the past is exactly what builds what we're seeing today. And one of our missions, I think people better understand the world today and can plan for the future if they understand the past. So that's part of our mission, is to just keep people connected to that and to help them see that the way things are right now aren't the way they always have been or need to be.
Preservation is also a key. You mentioned that term, preservation. You have something coming up soon about that as well.
Yes. There's an affiliation group called the Lorain County Preservation Network, where it's a bunch of kind of leaders from various historical organizations in the county get together maybe once a month or every couple of months just to talk about what's happening in their community, like what buildings might be endangered or what new laws might be being passed that might endanger historic properties, and what efforts we can all do together to draw attention to the importance of history and specifically historic architecture. So this Saturday there is an expo or open house, and this year the Lorain Historical Society is hosting it at their new newly renovated Carnegie Center. So that's open this Saturday from 11 to 3, and there will be two speakers there, one from the Cleveland Restoration Society and one from, I can't get the name right, but it's the organization in Cleveland that's very involved in historic neighborhoods there, that keeping those revitalized. And you do see when communities have vibrant, historic downtowns, visitors like that, it builds stronger communities. So we just like to remind people, especially in this day and age of change and new construction, that there is value to historic properties.
One of the things I saw on your website is an upcoming program. It's sort of very specific. It's called Historic Window Repair Workshop.
Yes.
I just find that fascinating because the first line says, have a window that's painted shut, loose putty, and I'm thinking, lived in a house or rented it in some place, that's something that they come about and think, how could I get that window to, you know, make it function again? But sometimes windows are not the windows of the modern day. There's a lot of contraptions and a lot of specialty things to go with it to make them work properly, I guess.
You'll actually find that the newer windows, like aluminum windows, vinyl windows, those are pretty much, once they're broken, you have to replace the entire window. But the older windows, you can repair the different wooden parts, the weights that might be in the wall, all the muttons and sashes and things like that. I think people today are just becoming more and more separated from handcrafts. So historic windows might be really easy to fix, but you just have to know the right tools and how to do it. So the workshop is going to go step by step from taking the window out of your house to, you know, fixing it up and putting it back in. So it's for everyone. You don't have to be a craftsperson or a carpenter. You can just be a homeowner who really wants to save your windows.
I owned an old home in Lakewood once upon a time with those weights you talk about. I could never figure out how that worked or why they didn't work.
There's a rope and a thing in the wall somewhere, and
that's crazy.
Well, what do you mean it's crazy?
No weights in the wall?
Without any of that, feel how heavy the window is.
Well, I guess,
to lift
yeah.
up some of those
yeah,
big
they
windows.
They had style there. They didn't want you to see their weights. They wanted to hide them away.
That's right.
No, it's all kind of neat. And obviously, it's something that people can sort of learn through different programs that you offer. Summer camp, those programs, are they starting to get filled up? Are you getting people signing up?
Not quite filled up, because we're just getting the word out. Parents are starting to plan their summer weeks now. So we'll have 3 weeks, and we kind of aim towards the end of the summer, because we find a lot of other programs and organizations aim for the beginning and middle of summer. So we kind of get the tail end when kids still want things to do. So we're having three this year. One is going to be about space. Air and space. Ohio has these connections to the Wright brothers, NASA, John Glenn. So we have a lot to talk about related to space and aviation history in Ohio. So that's the last week of July. And then the first week of August, I'm very excited about this camp, even though I don't teach them anymore. It's, called All Play, All Chores, or All Work, All Play. That's what it is. So it's about historic games, but also the kids will get to try different crafts, like maybe candle making and basket weaving and weaving. So just hands-on activities and things that I think a lot of adults would like to try again, too. And then the second week of August, we're doing our usual camp on architecture. That's always very popular. So we walk the kids around town. Oberlin is nice because you can just take about a half an hour walk and see almost all of the major architecture styles and teach from that. And also the kids will get to build mini buildings and try different experiments, like they have to use pieces of paper to see if they can hold up certain blocks of wood. So little engineering experiments. So it's a lot of fun.
You mentioned the architecture's styles here and how different they all are. Was that on purpose?
No. As far as I know, it wasn't on purpose. Especially when you look at the college, it was more of a what's popular at the time. But also they did have some master architects. One of them was Cass Gilbert. And he built the Art Museum, Finney Chapel, and Cox Administration Building, and the what used to be the Theological School. So he built quite a few buildings, but he had this grand plan for both sides, the east and west side of the square. But either the college administrators didn't like certain designs or they ran out of funding. Funding was the one thing that kept it from being a unified look. So I think Oberlin was just very eclectic. They kind of liked different views, and like the Conservatory of Music that is designed by Minoru Yamasaki, who designed the World Trade Towers. So they kind of like to bring in these world-class architects once in a while, too.
And even as we speak, a new building going up, the Peter B. Lewis
building. New Inn, yes. In fact, the New Inn, maybe not materials, but the way it's structured as a block at the corner of the block is much more like the old inn that used to be there in like the late 1800s. So they're kind of going back in style, except it's all aluminum and glass instead of brick today.
Very good. Well, Liz Schultz, Oberlin Heritage Center. Before we let you go, I wanted to touch briefly. You're looking to mark the cemeteries with GPS, or at least how does that work?
Yeah, we've got a very dedicated crew. Last year was kind of a pilot year. We're trying to figure out our technology and how we keep track of things. But ideally, and this may take us a couple years, we would like to have a GPS coordinate for every single monument or at least area in the cemetery, because Westwood, there are about 10,000 burials in there, which you may not see. So it can be hard to find markers. There might be one section, but Section S might have 300 people there. So this can help family members. This can also help historians and researchers. And we can give tours there, too, and say, like, these are 20 beautiful monuments. Go check these out. And a lot of people, we could just give them coordinates, and a lot of cell phones could get you fairly close in there. So it's a fun mix of history and new technology that can help us interpret these historic spaces.
Sounds really good. People want to find out more about some of the things we're talking about, the upcoming classes or the programs, where's a good place for them to get details?
Probably the easiest way is our website. It's oberlinheritagecenter.org. Or they can call us at 440-774-1700.
Liz Schultz, thanks for stopping in. Appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you very much.